Welcome back, Greg. Oh, I almost said Greg. Craig. Hello, I believe Greg is your brother, is he not? That's right, I'm interrogating you, Craig. Where were you and your brother on January 6th? I know where you were, you traitorous dog. You're probably working for the Justice Department now, aren't you? Yes, that's what I thought. We're worming your way to the inside. Got yourself a pardon, didn't you? You and your brother. You son of a bitch. I'm not sure why I'm doing this accent, but I'm going to continue as long as we are here. Craig, did I do it again? I think I did it again. Craig. Oh, Craig. Oh, I have to turn my not share screen camera. Gonna leave that on with the... Do I have everything? Yes. Ah, now you can see me, Craig. But do you see the truth? The truth of the world, Craig. Those little eyes of yours see all, don't they? Oh, God, this thing is sticky. Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, I suppose that's what happens when you create something that uses 2.5 pounds of honey. Why? How? Like, it's... I wouldn't have thought that they even rate it in pounds. But, well, here we are. I would have, you know, just considering that it's generally, I guess, I mean, it's not quite a liquid. I suppose it is more viscous, but I guess I still would have thought that they would have, you know, called it like milliliters or something. The pounds, I guess that's just how they do. Because when you look on the bottle, it is in ounces, like 12 or 16 ounces. I got one, Craig, I got 24 ounces because I did the calculations and I required 36 ounce of honey, and so I got it. Isn't that right, Craig? Can you hear the crystal of my glass? Oh my, that actually is quite... It's quite delightful. Oh my. Oh. Craig, you should have a sip. I think it would do you good to lighten up just a little bit. Well,
okay. And I just
welcome.
Connect my devices.
Huzzah. Greg, do you think she can hear us?
Okay.
I don't think she hears us.
Shoot, why can I not hear you?
Aha! See? What did I tell you, Craig? Doubted me like you always do, you little so-and-so, with your fancy little microphone that looks like a circle.
Oh.
Real? For real?
I can hear you now.
Hello? Hooray!
Hi. Oh, my God.
It sounds like you're still a bit on the mend.
I was not expecting that to be so hard.
Awesome. It's amazing how... Ready. Was it the kitty?
Yes, he's my little buddy next to me on a little stool.
Oh my God. He's like, I'm just hanging out. Good boy.
Because he likes to be... I'm trying to move you closer, damn it.
He's like, stop. Stop, human, whatever it is you're doing.
He's like trying to play with me. Can you let go?
Oh.
Thank you.
He's like, no, I'm a little baby boy and I've got a lot of energy and I gotta get it.
I mean,
it out.
He is, but still.
But still, he has little. Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about this in the news. There was the first ever recorded bonobo society murder. So,
wait, what?
Yes. Okay. So, bonobo monkeys.
That was the last thing I was expecting.
I promise this all. It's all going to come back through and relate. I promise.
This is the beginning of the episode. You realize that, right? Like this has to just be the cold open.
Yes, I'm in a cold open specifically at bonobo monkeys.
Please. Oh my God.
So, you know, we have what people consider to be our closest related relatives, chimpanzees, and bonobo monkeys.
Right.
And the difference between the two is that chimpanzees are a patriarchal society. They are known to be very violent and aggressive.
Okay.
Compared to bonobos, which are a matriarchal society. They're very docile, calm, not known to be violent in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was, is that a male adult bonobo monkey started abusing and sexually assaulting one of the younger monkeys. Wow. So all of the females in charge in this society of, like, there's like 50 of them, I believe.
Okay.
Beat him to death after he was caught, because they don't fucking stand for anyone to abuse their children.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking like bit his balls off type of violence, stoned him, and every monkey in this society stood by and watched and was like, yeah, that's what you fucking get, dude.
You know how we do things. You can't.
Which it's...
That is insane.
All I want to do with how things are running and going with the Epstein files is blame the fucking patriarchy.
Sure.
Because it's who are the people that are abusing these children? Mostly men. Who are these people in power? Mostly men. They're protecting each other because they're like, oh, but like, it's our right as men, because we have egos, and you know, I can do whatever the fuck I want because I'm a man and we're in charge.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Compared to the fact that, like, I'm fairly certain if we were a matriarchy, if we had found out that there was even a lick of this happening in the 90s when people first came forward about it, action would have been taken then, and it would have been brutal, and it would have, it probably would have been fairly violent because of, like, feminist rage. More in the sense that it's like, you don't fucking do that. What's wrong with you? You don't abuse children. Yeah. And it would have been shut down then, and this would have never have been a thing.
Sure. So that was fun.
Yeah. You ready to talk about some whiskey?
I was just going to say, like, I feel like an hour ago I said, like, this has to be the beginning of the episode. And now it's been a long traveling sense of, like, world geography and the Super Bowl, and but here we are, and we're happy for you to join us, ladies and gentlemen. This is Peculiar Pairings. Hello, thank you for being here. We're happy.
Hello.
Yeah, my name is Matt.
Welcome. I am Celine. Hello.
Yeah, this is our little show where Celine tells us a story, and we have a treat, and usually an alcoholic beverage. Gotta loosen up and have some fun. And then we share some laughs, and we share some tears sometimes. Most recently, they tend to be kind of socio-politically motivated tears. But we already went on that round for quite a while. So we'll just get more into the swing of what we're actually here to talk about. And Celine, you had kind of already mentioned it, but what is our topic for this week?
We are talking about the Pennsylvania Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah. Which I am pretty sure I've heard of, but I genuinely think I don't know anything about this, really. But that does bring us to our pairing, which is... I have to give credit to Wikipedia a little bit, and some forums that I found on Reddit, as well as the website allrecipes.com. I did do a little bit of research, and I don't know, were you able to find the specific pretzels?
So I actually went, because you said warm pretzels could be the option.
Yes.
And I went with my favorite sandwich shop, Chiba Hut, and got some of their warm pretzels, their little pretzel bites.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. Do you get the nacho cheese?
I did it with honey mustard.
Oh, okay. That's a good
choice.
Which
was like really good because they do like a garlic parmesan seasoning with it.
Oh.
Thank you, Chiba Hut, for your delicious pretzel bites.
That does sound... I'm not a huge pretzel person, which is the only reason that I was like a little annoyed with my own choice for this week. And I was going to go warm. So for anyone on the East Coast, or if you live in Pennsylvania, you might be more familiar with the brand of... I did not find a phonetic like guide. I'm going to say... Oots.
I think that's how you say it.
They might pronounce it Uts, but the brand is UTZ. And the reason I said or a warm pretzel is because apparently they are a huge deal in Pennsylvania. They started there, and so now they send their like pre-made pretzels all across the country, but they are apparently known for their warm pretzels. And based on what I've read, they are incredible. So that's why I was like, if you want, you can go for like any other brand that's a warm pretzel. But I did get their Utz pretzels. I got two, actually. I got one that is, they're kind of braided twists that are honey wheat. And they're kind of standard they're waffles, but they're butter flavored. And I have to admit already, as a person who I just said I'm not really a pretzel person, they're pretty goddamn good fucking pretzels. I've never heard of them before. And I sent you that picture of like me standing in the grocery store because I had looked them up a little bit and I knew for a fact that they were at a nearby Walmart. But I was kind of pressed for time today, so I just went to the Hy-Vee, which was closer, and I found that whole wall of just their pretzels. And I'm like, oh, okay, so their pretzels get around. And they're pretty... fucking delicious. We'll leave the ratings for later, but the drink is a bit more intricate than we have gone in recent history, and this is where allrecipes.com came in. And this, I don't know necessarily if this is what they call it out there, but what I found it to be, now I have to pull it up because I lost it again. They call it Coal Region Bolio. Boilo. God damn it. Boilo. I knew I was going to fuck that up. And I'm assuming it's just because you put a bunch of stuff in a pot and you boil it. But for anyone who's like Midwestern and maybe this goes down to like Colorado, if you're familiar with apple pie, it's kind of a liqueur that a lot of people make usually around like Christmas time, holiday season, that kind of thing. This is a regional... homemade liqueur, essentially, that I thought had more whiskey involved with it, but you basically just add the booze to it afterwards. But it's throw a bunch of oranges and lemons and cinnamon and a bunch of dash of other stuff, and you boil that for like half an hour, and then you strain everything out, and it becomes this incredibly sweet liquor infused thing. And it's a bit tart and it's very strong. I will note that at the end of the recipe, I did not do it this way. I put a bunch of it in a glass, but they do suggest just taking it as slightly warmed up shots. It's not necessarily meant to be a drink that you just drink, but that's what I did, and we can talk more about that later. But without any further ado, Celine, let's get into our story.
All right, so my sources for today are bradfordhouse.org, mountvernon.org, and ttb.gov. So I'm going to take us back to 1791, a long, long time ago.
You can hear the hooves clip-clopping on the pavement. Not pavement, Jesus. I already fucked it up. Cobblestone, that's it. Cobblestone, dirt, dust, whatever. Somebody's playing a harmonica off in the distance.
This brings us to about 20 years after the Revolutionary War began. And this time, the U.S. had a lot of debt. Wars are expensive.
That is true.
In case nobody told you.
So are you essentially saying that we've basically been in debt as long as we've been a country?
Probably.
I think we did get out of debt. I was going to say, I think there were times when we did have a surplus, but I feel like 99% of our country's history has just been in debt. Seems reasonable.
At the time, our Treasury Secretary, Alexander Hamilton, ever heard of him?
I was going to say, that name sounds familiar.
Sounds very, very familiar.
I heard someone talking about them one time, but I wasn't in the room where it happened.
Exactly. And you had to be in the room where it happened.
Yeah, right? No idea who this guy is. But anyway, okay, so we got this weird dude.
It might be nice if he's on your side. I had to throw that in there.
I'm trying to think of another one. All I can think of is the King George.
Because, he's always writing like he's running out of time. This dude, he's working hard.
Nice. That's me.
And like the hardworking man he is, I was like, hey, we kind of need some revenue for this new government because we have debt. Mm-hmm. So how about this? How about we put a tax on whiskey produced in the U.S.?
Okay.
And anti-federalists like Thomas Jefferson were like, no, dude, fuck that shit. We need to do as little as possible as a government.
Right.
And I'm assuming, based on this, this is, kind of where those Federalist Papers kind of come in.
Okay. I've heard those too.
So, the U.S. Congress did decide, you know what, this is a good idea. We're going to put in this tax in, they enacted it in 1791. And this tax, unlike a tariff, which is taxed on imported goods into the U.S., that generally does get passed on directly to the consumer. It was a tax on Americans who produced whiskey and other distilled alcohol spirits.
Okay. Interesting.
So on the production itself. And this kind of caused a small revolt by some of the people. It's surprising.
It is amazing how much of our history revolves around booze, where it's like, this is kind of the opposite of later amendments we would have for prohibition, where it's like, okay, you can make and sell alcohol, but we're going to tax the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And then we're like, fuck you, dude.
So
take our booze.
The tax varied, and it was somewhere between 6 to 18% per gallon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So for small distillers, they often paid more than twice per gallon what larger producers paid. So a larger producer maybe paid more like 6 per gallon. Gallon, and a smaller one probably paid more like 12.
It's kind of weird how that always seems to happen again, like in the history of our country, where the bigger, like more profitable people end up paying less in taxes, and the smaller operations and like the individuals are like, no, you have to support the country more because you have less.
Well, and I don't understand why it's not just the same across the board.
Right.
That's like, hey, everybody pays 6% per gallon. Done. The end.
That is kind of weird. Right. Like it's all the same type of alcohol. Why would not just all be taxed the same?
Yeah. And all of their payments had to be made in cash to the federal revenue officer appointed by the distiller's county.
Huh.
So What happened was that this pissed off a lot of Western Pennsylvania farmers. And I wish in some regards that we were more like the French with like protest and revolution, because the
Sure.
French farmers will just go to your cattle and fucking dump manure on your doorstep. And the Pennsylvania farmers were just like, fuck that shit, I'm not paying.
Oh, it is less dramatic.
Yeah. So, I mean, the French ones will also not pay, but they'll do like a step extra
Right.
typically.
I assumed it was in addition. They're like, well, I will pay, but I'm still putting shit on your doorstep, you piece of crap.
I'll be like, I will
They're
not
like, yeah,
pay,
no,
and
I'm
I will put
also
shit
not
on
going to
your
pay you.
doorstep.
Did you see I lit the bag of shit on fire and then he stomped it out with his foot and now it is stuck inside of his boots? Oh, he wasn't even wearing boots, it is inside of his toes. What a
Yep.
disgusting piece of shit. I spit in your general direction.
So many of these farmers frequently distilled their grain into liquor because it was easier to ship and more profitable for the grains.
Oh,
Because
sure.
shipping their harvest east was dangerous because of like poor storage and dangerous roads.
Right.
And the distilling process also helped with preservation. So it helped kind of keep things in a consumable fashion.
Oh, yeah,
So,
sure. If it's alcohol tends not to go bad, so if you turn your
yeah.
grain into alcohol, it will naturally last longer.
Yeah. So for them, they're like, this is how most of us make our money from distilling whiskey and selling. So they felt like the tax abused federal authority and targeted those who relied on the crops like corn,
Sure.
rye, and other grains to make a living. So they're like, you're targeting us specifically, and that's pretty shitty.
Well, and I like how
But
this illustrates too that one thing that has never changed in our government and in like taxation and stuff is like, do not fuck with the farmers. Like, we all depend on them. And it's
yeah.
like it is kind of amazing that we have kind of come full circle now where we mostly like this day and age subsidize them rather than tax them. It's like, yeah,
Yeah.
that, I mean, they're providing food for all of us. So yeah, don't fuck with the farmers.
Well, and a lot of the large scale farms could absorb the financial burden, which basically they just passed on the cost to their paying customers instead of handling that themselves. But
Right.
smaller farms couldn't really do that, and it put them into financial hardship. And they also had a few other concerns, like they would have to be registered as a still, and if you failed to pay, you then had to appear in a federal court rather than
Oh,
your
wow.
local court. And for a lot of them, you could be forced to travel like 300 miles just to go to court.
Wow. Which back
Yeah.
then, like 300 is a long drive nowadays. Can you imagine if you
Yeah.
just had like a horse and buggy or just like had to walk? Good Lord.
Yeah. I'd be pretty pissed.
That's a
So
week-long
with them
excursion.
just being like, yeah, we're not doing that. We're gonna just not pay. And they viewed it as an unfair policy dictated by the Eastern elite that was
Right.
negatively affecting people on the frontier, the working class. So
Which makes sense too, because it's like we
Congress,
just fought a revolution. Like
yeah.
this is the same thing that happened before, where it's like this government that is far away is imposing this tax upon us. Like we
Yep.
just fought a war over this, and now you're
Yeah.
doing the thing that we didn't want to have happen. Right.
So Congress had very little success in actually collecting tax along the frontier, obviously.
You don't say. Yeah, I
So
can understand that.
while most of them simply just refused to pay the tax, there were quite a few that took a more violent stance against it.
Okay. That sounds
Yep.
like the America we know.
So tax rebels tarred and feathered several whiskey tax collectors and threatened to beat many who offered them like office space or housing, which then led to many Western counties not having a resident federal tax office, or like tax officer, because right. I mean, I don't want to fucking do that job.
Sure. And as we already learned, you have to pay the tax officer. If there's no tax officer, you know, well, you can't pay your taxes. So
exactly.
That's on you, federal government.
There's no office. So how can we pay them?
I'm not refusing
there's
to
no
pay.
There's no office in our county.
Right.
I'm not, yes. Who am I going to pay them to?
Right? You can't blame me for that. Yeah, there's no one to pay. I would love to pay them, but there's nobody there.
And some dude stands in the back and he's like, I'll be the officer. And they're like, fucking sit down, Jonathan.
You just hear a gun. You just hear a gunshot go off from somewhere. And he just passed out. And they're like, I didn't hear no one volunteer for nothing.
I heard nothing, sir. So, Washington, sweet President George Washington, deranged psychopath George Washington, originally tried to solve this dispute peacefully. I say that more in that, like, we all know that while Washington is always depicted as, like, this large, docile man, he also had, like, lead in his teeth, so I don't think he was quite right.
Yeah, a lot of people get a lot of things wrong about his teeth, not least of which, I think you're right, is that, like, it fucked with him in a lot of ways that I don't think a lot of people know, not least of which like lead poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole wooden teeth thing
lead
isn't
poisoning,
entirely
you're just,
accurate.
Like, not quite right.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, God, what a way to go.
Then, in 1972, he issued a national proclamation reprimanding Westerners for their resistance
to
the
sorry,
operation of the laws of the U.S. for raising revenue upon spirits distilled within the same state or county.
I am going to interrupt you. I believe you said 1972. I'm assuming it was
1792. Sorry, 1792. Oh, my God.
Okay. Just like, damn, George Washington's looking
don't
pretty
fucking
good.
Don't mind my dyslexia. 70s. He lived for 200 years.
Like, hell, I didn't know he was still kicking. All right. he's still kicking and still taxing.
Sorry, 1792. My bad.
Getting high as fuck.
I'm a little dyslexic. Don't mind me.
That's fine. wanted to make sure.
Despite his pleas and congressional modifications to the law, they still had pretty violent opposition, and it just grew over the next 2 years. And this was especially true in southern Pennsylvania counties of Allegheny, Fayette, Washington, and Westmoreland.
Woo! And they are still a proud people today.
I mean, have you seen Philly?
they do seem to embody the strongest, loudest spirit of what America has to offer.
We remember what happened at the Super Bowl last year when the Eagles won. They were going to riot if they win and riot if they lose. Either way, the people going to riot.
Yeah, those motherfuckers are crazy. Like, don't let them go to the Super Bowl. It's not going to end well for
them, though.
They
are passionate people in Philly.
They very much are.
So this brings us to July 1794.
1794. Okay, not 1970. Okay.
Not 1974. 1794.
Perfect.
U.S. Marshal David Lennon arrived in the area to serve a write order to those who refused to pay and appear in court in Philadelphia. So basically like a summons.
Right. I don't think he understands what happens to federal lawmen that come through our town. Who's Philadelphia, boy? You know where you are.
So, in Washington County, Federal Revenue Officer John Neville acted as Lennox's guide. So, two different officers.
Okay.
So, we have David Lennon doing his thing, trying to get people in. And then in another area, we have John Neville and Lennox acting as, like, his guide for the area.
Okay.
And they served two men. A right on William Miller, but after leaving, or sorry, the two men served a right on William Miller. So they went to William's house. I was like, hey, you need to show up for this court summons in Philly. And
I just imagine them being as like meek as like kids in school trying to like raise funds. funds for their next like band trip or something. They're like, hey, yep. We're going door to door and we noticed that you haven't paid your taxes. And so wondering if you could pay taxes now because yep. we need them.
So after leaving the paperwork with the angry spearsmen, they were met by an armed group of his neighbors. And as they were fleeing, they heard gunshots as they rode off, but neither of them were injured. So they definitely got shot at.
That's that Second Amendment coming into play.
Oh, yeah. And then a force of 400 disaffected whiskey rebels, mainly from Washington County, attacked and destroyed the home of tax inspector John Neville in south, just he was south of Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And in and they... said altercation, he shot and killed Oliver Miller, who was like the head of the movement.
Oh no.
And this then began a shootout in which it is now this group of rebels, and then his slaves joined in, which I'm assuming is probably not willingly, but more in the fact that like he is the person that employs them. And if he dies, horrible, horrible things could probably happen to them.
Right, right. Kind of the like stick with the devil you know instead of rolling the dice on like what could happen.
Yeah, instead of the one you don't.
Yeah.
So they started firing on the mob from their quarters.
Okay, because yeah, my first thought was like, I'm assuming it's just this guy and his family versus a mob of 400 people, but okay, of course he owned slaves. It's the 1700s. So, yeah, that makes sense.
So the next day, they came back to his house, but at this time, Neville had fled with the help of some federal officers and went back to Philadelphia. And they then had a shootout with the federal soldiers with a new rebel leader, James McFarland, who was then killed in the shootout. But the rebels outnumbered the federal officers, and they later surrendered. So then several days later...
surrendered?
Yes, because they were outnumbered.
Okay. Right, right.
So several days later, David Bradford, who is the deputy county attorney for Washington County, took command of the rebels in the county. So now David Bradford is in charge.
I'm sorry, you said he's an attorney?
He's the county attorney, and he's like, you know what? Okay. You guys are right. I'm going to lead the charge now. I'm in charge.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Well,
you're welcome.
He's like, Yeah, I may be a lawman, but I've never taken the law into my own hands. He's like, I want to feel the law as it beats its last as I rip it from the chest.
So then they started to grow in numbers and started threatening to spread to other states outside of Pennsylvania. So word of this reaches back to our Congress, and Hamilton's like, look, we cannot tolerate a hostile force in Pennsylvania. If this government, this brand new baby government is going to survive, we have to show that we can control the people and that like we can suppress a rebellion like this.
I was not expecting the word suppressed. I thought you were going to be like, so he wanted to negotiate and be like, look, guys, we made a wrong move. But so I feel like he's not in the mindset of de-escalation.
This is within the
same calendar.
Sorry. So it is like at this point that he's advising George Washington, like, hey, you need to bring force to these people.
Right.
And George Washington is like, nah, we'll have a state militia on standby and we'll send in negotiators first.
Okay. I thought you were going to say he's like, and this is when George Washington first created the group known as ICE. And he would send them in to some... Started all the...
No. So...
So yeah, George Washington was keeping a pretty cool head. He's like, no. We don't have to just like... push him. Yeah, we'll talk.
He's like, we can try to talk him down first.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. This did not work.
Oh. Oh, no. George tried. Just immediately, no.
After that, he's like, okay, well, since that did not work, we'll go with Hamilton's original suggestion. So he led a force.
Hamilton's just sitting behind him, like, tapping his foot, like, can we do the thing I said now? Because talking is not helping.
And they led a force of 13,000 troops, more than he commanded during the Revolutionary War, into Pennsylvania to Bedford. So they brought them to Bradford. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, to kind of
David Bradford.
Yeah, and so this is more or less a military coming against a bunch of like militia'd up farmers.
Well, and like I'm sorry, 13,000 is so many to take on 400.
That's
like
for anyone. Yeah, for anyone who's not great at math. 13,000 is a lot more. It's multiple digits more.
So
that's a lot of fucking troops.
They get the troops ready. Washington then returns to Philadelphia, and Hamilton and Virginia Governor Henry Lee marched with the group towards Bradford. And they warned locals on their way not to abet, aid, or comfort the insurgents, as they will then have to answer to the contrary at their peril. So basically telling them, hey, if you help these guys, you're going to have to answer to the crimes as well.
And we brought 13, I don't know if you heard, we brought 13,000 dudes. So yeah, don't mess with us.
We came stacked.
Yeah, for sure.
And
fucking ready.
By the time the federal forces arrived, the rebellion had collapsed and most of the rebels had fled out of fear.
Oh. I was expecting this really big dramatic climactic. I suppose all the troops were too. They're like, oh, we brought 13.
Yeah.
Did you hear? We brought a bunch of. Okay. Yeah, go home, guys.
Yep. And then later, two men, John Mitchell and Philip Weigel, were convicted of treason, but they were then later pardoned by George Washington. Aww. David Bradford fled south to West Florida, which is now present-day Louisiana, and he just started a new life there.
That is really far West Florida. Holy shit.
Well, considering, so it's... the original part of Florida before any of that became part of the U.S.
Yeah.
It was so like a bigger purchase. It went pretty far. It went pretty far inland. And they later sold off parts of it so it became smaller.
Gotcha.
So he started a new life there and completed his home in 1797 in St. Francisville. And his wife and children joined him shortly after that.
This all happened in a relatively short amount of time then. I was expecting this to go like into the 1800s or something. It's really only a few years.
Oh no.
And he's already retiring and
yeah. And he eventually received a pardon from John Adams for his role in the rebellion.
Oh.
And
lots of pardon.
While this did not entirely squash how upset people were about the taxation. The actual like rebelling and fighting against the government ceased.
Okay.
But they gained a lot of support for candidates like Thomas Jefferson because he opposed this tax, and that helped him defeat John Adams in 1800.
I was gonna say that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. By 1802, President Thomas Jefferson then repealed the tax on whiskey and was like, you know what? See, I fixed it. The end. Let's all be friends.
Yeah, and he's like, democracy. I told you I was going to do this. You voted me in and I did the thing. Like, isn't that refreshing? Future generations of America?
I actually said I was going to
do
what you wanted.
I did did the thing. Yeah.
I did the thing I promised I would do to get me elected.
And the political wheeling and dealing has never ceased.
Yep. So that is the Whiskey Rebellion.
I do appreciate how this is. Like, I kind of figured when you started test about it, I was like, I feel like this is going to be a relatively shorter thing. But we vamped so much earlier on that I'm like, it's still a pretty full length episode.
Oh, yeah.
But it still is amazing to me that we've had such a history with alcohol in terms of like how much, well, even just substances. Because even like if you talk about like the Boston Tea Party, we have such an obsession with like drinks for whatever reason. Like they really strongly motivate us to not take taxes and just general shit from people because it's like, this is our whiskey, man. Fuck you.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, yeah, and you can kind of understand it, the Boston Tea Party, where it's like we're still fighting against the British. And I had heard of the Philadelphia Whiskey Rebellion, but I can definitely understand the spirit of their frustration when it's like I said before, like, we just fought a war against this exact thing, and now you're doing the thing. Yep. Yeah. Somehow feels strangely relevant to today.
It does, actually. Surprisingly.
Yeah, well, I must say that as a person, like I said earlier, who is not really a pretzel guy, I would give these pretzels a solid 7. They were much more than I expected. Well, I would... You're so spectacular. The warmth and the Parmesan garlic. I'm like, I feel like I didn't go nearly fancy enough with my pretzels. I did think about looking up a warm pretzel one. But... Okay, I was going to say.
I thought about it more. They should be a 9.
They should be a 9, yeah. The my pre-made bagged pretzels were still pretty good. And the drink is very strong and very tart. And I feel like how much of it I drank in terms of just like having a glass is my own fault. I'm going to give that a 6. But this is one of those rare moments where I'm going to give them together like an 8. Because the strength of the drink and the tartness of it blended really well with a dry, salty cracker thing. Pretzel. I suppose that's why pretzels are bar food. Because like, They just
together
so well.
Like why pretzels are so great with Oktoberfest.
Oh yeah.
Or like even better, a beer brat in a pretzel bun.
Yes. Yes. I completely
that
agree.
Right there.
Oh god, this is so good. So like so many calories, but they're so delicious. And then paired with a beer, which also has a lot of calories. But you're like, it's fucking Oktoberfest. I don't care. Oh, God, so good.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate the story. And it was interesting. And again, strangely relevant to today. But listeners, we hope you enjoyed it too. And if you have any recommendations for us, either pairings or stories, you can email us at peculiarpairingspod@gmail.com. You can find us on the app formerly known as Twitter at peculiarpairpod. You can check us out on Instagram at peculiarpairingspod. And please look us up on Patreon. And we are now on TikTok.
We are. So, yay. Yeah.
It's like, well done.
I need to post something on there, but yes, we are there.
I gotta start doing more things.
We gotta start somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without further ado, I think that is the end. We thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for coming along on this journey. Do we know what we're doing next week? So I was like, there's something in the back of my head that I'm supposed to say. It's been a while since we recorded. I'm like, come on, there's one more thing.
I know. We are going going to be talking about the moon landing being fake.
Yes. That's, oh, I love it so much. I'm a sucker for a good conspiracy theory. I love that kind of stuff so badly.
Oh, and, I am too.
I'm very excited.
I'm a sucker for it.
Should we have moon pies? I feel like we need to have moon pies. I'll give it some more thought.
We might.
I have to do that. Well, thanks for being with us. Yeah, thanks for being with us this week, everybody. And we will see you next week. So thank you very much. Bye-bye.